So the title of the talk is How Can the Body Be a Vehicle for Realizing Liberation? Okay, got it now. So the title of the talk is How Can the Body Be a Vehicle for Realizing Liberation? It seems a paradox. This lump of flesh. We are born in a body. We are dropped into a body. We are embodied. Mitgalmim in Hebrew. We're embodied. And then we have to cope with it. We have to dress it, feed it, look after it. We have to defend it. We are busy with it day and night. We get pissed off when it gets sick. We are disappointed in it when it doesn't function the way we want. We are despaired when it gets old. And the last thing we want is for it to disappear again, back into the world, and die. So how can this thing, this lump of flesh, be our vehicle for freedom? It's an interesting question. One time, Achan Chah was called to a disciple who was dying. And he gave a talk in which he called the body Sakka Dharma. The Sakka is truth. So the body as truth. And I'll just quote a few words of what he said to this yogi that was dying, this disciple of his. This very lump of flesh that lies here in decline is Sakka Dharma, the truth. The truth of this body is Sakka Dharma, and it is the unchanging teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha taught us to look at the body, to contemplate it, and come to terms with its nature. We must be able to be at peace with the body, whatever state it is in. The Buddha taught that we should ensure that it's only the body that is locked up in jail, and not let the mind be imprisoned along with it. So now, as your body begins to run down and deteriorate with age, don't resist it. But don't let your mind deteriorate with it. Keep the mind separate. Give energy to the mind by realizing the truth of the way things are. This is the nature of the body. It can't be any other way. Having been born, it gets old and sick and then it dies. And you are presently encountering this great truth. Look at the body with wisdom. And realize it. It's true that the body is one of the four foundations, and we practice with the body as a window into truth, but we also practice with feelings and with citta, mind, heart, and with Dhamma. So there are four foundations, and body is one of them. But each one of them is a window through which we can look out and see a deeper truth. So I want to just explore the body in this talk as the window. And it is a question, how can this thing that seems so physical take us beyond itself? It is a question that needs contemplation. The first thing to understand is how we lost truth. Where did it go? We lost truth by the habits of shutting down. By habit. So we really learnt over the struggle for survival to shut down our interest in the body. We only know we have a head if we have a headache. Otherwise, we really go through life not knowing that we have a head. And if we have a headache, the first thing we do is we take Akamol in order to shut it up and go back to having no head. We don't know what our body is telling us. Unless it hurts, or unless we need to do something, or unless it's hungry, or we have to, it calls us. If it doesn't call us, we're busy with ideas and with running and with working and with talking and with all the things that occupy our busy life. So we have to go beyond the sense that the body is just a kind of servant, a kind of a chamor, an ass. And I'm reminded very beautifully of the story of Bilham in the Bible, because Bilham was riding along on his donkey, Aton, female donkey. And it really is, in the Jewish world, a man riding a donkey is the image of us riding our body. The donkey, chamor, is choma, is the body. Bilham was riding on the donkey, means mind riding on body. And he was so blind, because in the story there's an angel that was standing in the way saying, don't go here. And he had no idea. He couldn't see the angel, but the donkey could. And the donkey stopped. And he didn't know why the donkey stopped, and he beat it, saying, go on, go on. The donkey saw the angel. He didn't. So it's a nice story that the body knows things that we shut down. We we don't listen. As I say, unless it hurts, or unless it's hungry, or unless we need to do something with it. So we need to explore and awaken our relationship to the body as the first step to begin to look under the radar. What's really happening with this lump of flesh that we are assuming is just a piece of meat that serves us? What's going on with this body? For that we have to be what you might call a fair witness. That means ed hogen, a fair witness, meaning that we take a step back and witness without, again, feeding the sense of the body is what I want, what I don't want, what I need and what I don't need, but allowing the witnessing to take us deeper into exploring, into going under the radar, going inside the body, exploring what the body is really telling us. And here is an adventure. It's like diving into the sea. Here is an adventure of discovery. It's discovering landscapes which we can't imagine. It's like going across, walking across the great Himalayas. We discover new landscapes there. the breath is part of the body, and the breath is, because it's subtle, because it's moving, because it's connecting to the inside and the outside, because it has mind in it and body in it, there is a dance in the breath that is particularly interesting for us as a way of discovering bodily life. The breath is part of bodily life, but it has a special interest for us. Track the breath, follow the breath, listen to the breath. There is the dance. Like I said yesterday, the still point is where the dance is. In the breath, we can discover the dance. So the breath is an essence of bodily life, which is really interesting for us as a place of discovery of landscapes that we didn't imagine before. And it's very basic. We start with, this is where the first of the four tetrads of the Anapanasati Sutta, this is where it takes us. Mindfulness, sati, anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness that there is a body, and what it's telling us. And it starts with really the very simple fact, knowing the difference between one breath and the next, long or short, knowing that there is a body, knowing what the breath and the body are telling us, knowing their language, and knowing the whole body. It's also in the first four of the Anapanasati Sutta. When we begin to listen, the stories of the body are not physical stories. The body remembers. The body is telling us what it went through in our life. The body is telling us what we did to it. Look, you didn't pay attention to me. Look what you've done to me. Look what the world has done to me. You're not listening. The body comes up with the messages of our conditioning. The body tells us about the scars. The body tells us in stress, in discomfort, in restlessness, in the hindrances, the body tells us what it's been going through. What is its life story? It comes up in the present moment in the language of the body. It's like Bilham needed to listen to the language of the donkey. It doesn't tell us in words, the body. It tells us through hindrances, for example. It tells us in the language of the unconscious. We might just feel tiredness or restlessness, but that's the language of the body telling us about its life. Body-mind, of course. So all the experiences of bodily life, whether they're comfortable or uncomfortable, the stresses and the pains and the tensions, they're its language. And we need to deeply listen and let the story of the body touch us, unfold, open, and it does. All we have to do is sit here quietly and listen. And this quiet listening can be calm and still. And this is also part of the guidance in Anapanasati Sutta. Calming the body, calming ourselves, quietening ourselves and listening, and being available for the messages that the body is trying to tell us. And when we do that, when we are connecting to the body, we are connecting to Sakadharma, the truth, the Dharma of bodily life. We can experience joy, and this is also part of the practice, we can experience joy and peace and happiness because it's there inherent in the bodily life. We don't have to invent it. The dance of bodily life is joy. There's something, you can call it joy as default, as basic, as default, of just being alive in its nature, is energy, is flow, is dance, and that's joy. So part, when we listen carefully to bodily life, we discover joy as it is already there. We covered it over with issues, but when we open to the dance of life in this body, joy arises. The truth reveals itself as joy. We see the flow, we see the change, we see the dynamic nature of reality that takes us, that sweeps us along. We let go and we float on dynamic change. It's joyful. And as we do this, and as in our practice, the body becomes less and less of a thing, less and less of a kind of an object that we have to carry around with us, less and less of a burden that we have to pay attention to all the time and look after. And we find that actually we're looking at mind. Because how do we know we have a body? The mind knows. So in a certain way, when we're looking at the body, it's actually the mind looking at the mind. Via the body. And slowly, slowly, we may feel that we are in a mind world. We are in a world of awareness. And the body is, in a way, a body of awareness, almost like a body of light. The only way we know we have a body is through this awareness. So we are actually in the territory of awareness. And we begin to realize that as the practice continues. And then some interesting things can happen. For example, we may find that a pain in the body, when really closely examined with mind, becomes mind, becomes part of awareness, and therefore can be changed or can be different. It's not just like the body is not a thing that is stuck, an object, a solid thing that we have to cope with. Also, the language that the body is expressing through mind becomes dynamic, becomes free, becomes changeable. So we find if we pay real attention to a pain or a stress in the body, it can go, it can change. We can actually change pain. We can have joy in the midst of pain. We can see pain comes and goes. We can see that pain isn't a solid thing, that it needs us to be a sufferer in order to feel suffering in the body. So things, the dynamic, realizing the dynamic nature and the fact of the body of awareness itself can be really liberating. And it's quite important if you get sick and if you get old and you get tired and all the kind of things that the body does, it's quite important to be able to be free and see its dynamic nature and that it's us, it's mind, mind in body, body in mind. And we can discover many things at that level, at the level of body in mind and mind in body. For example, we discover it's not at all clear who's in charge of this body. Who is actually in control? I mean, who's doing it? Who's doing this life? Who's looking when we look at the body? Who's looking at whom? Or what is looking at what? And this is the nature of the third of the four tetrads of Anipanasutta, Satisutta, Citta, mind. We get close to mind through the body. And then we get close to mind through the mind. When things arise and pass in the eye of awareness, there is a natural freedom that we feel, that we no longer feel we are. We have to control. We have to do to make the body work for us. We have to have a certain body. We have to have a certain experience. Things begin to be much lighter and freer, just from the sense of awareness. Just through our ability to be a fair witness of the dynamic change in bodily life. By itself, it frees us. It frees us up. We have less concept about what the body should do or shouldn't do. We are less busy with the way the body should be or shouldn't be. We find more space, more freedom. The body becomes a partner and a mystery. And we just kind of step back and watch the show. Great movie of all time. This thing. The best movie. Most exciting. And in the sense of a dynamic, what was solid, what was a material thing that we have to schlep around with us in our life, this body, in the dynamic, in the realization of the dynamic and free nature of bodily life and body-mind, if we keep going there again and again and again, some basic space opens up for us, some basic sense of freedom opens in us, that we have to carry less solidity, less fixity, less closed. And when we do that, things begin to open up beyond the body itself. Now, I quoted T.S. Eliot yesterday, but every now and then I keep coming back to T.S. Eliot because of the beauty and the precision of his language. And he said about the body, the dance along the artery. Artery is the orakim. The circulation of the lymph are figured, are shaped in the drifting of the stars. It's so beautiful. There is no difference between the circulation of the lymph and the drift of the stars, the movement of the stars. Go up to summer in the tree. We move above the moving tree in light upon the figured leaf. It's just an image of, and we can feel that. We look at the body almost like we're looking at light on the leaves as we look down on a tree. And then he continues with the, the quote I gave yesterday. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. But neither arrest, means neither stopping, nor movement. But do not call it fixity. It's not frozen. Where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards. And this is the invitation of the fourth of the tetrads of the Anapanasati Sutta. The fourth is, in a way, riding on the breath to liberating realizations. And if we can get a sense that the circulation of our blood is figured in the circulation of the stars, it's a liberation. It's a liberating discovery. And moving from ownership and control and busyness with this body to seeing the body as a window to the stars, to the world, to beyond. Open the window, throw it open. And feel our connectedness in this changing universe. More lightness, more space, less boundary. I like the word prana, prana in Sanskrit. It's breath, breath of life. And but prana, of course, means the breath of life that is bringing life to everything. It's the power of life. And it experienced in us, in the body, as the flow of life. That we can get a sense that the flow of life in us and also out of us, beyond the body, is all prana, is breath. The world is being breathed. We are breathing. The world is being breathed. The world is breathing us. We are breathing the world. And there's a nice little story that I heard, and I don't know whether it's true or not, so don't ask me who said it. But I heard it from years back from a Dharma teacher. And apparently there was a group of old-time Dharma practitioners wandering around visiting yogis and hermits in Tibet. And they came upon a cave with a yogi, a Tibetan yogi, and his partner. Had been there like 20 years living there. And one of the Dharma teachers, through a translator, asked him, what's your practice? And he looked back and didn't respond. And the Dharma teacher said, what is your practice? What do you practice here? All these 20 years you've been in this cave practicing. What is it you practice? And he just didn't get an answer. And he asked the yogi again, well, do you practice mindfulness of breathing? And the yogi looked at him and said, the whole universe is breathing. What do you mean? And this is what I mean by the breath and the body as windows that we can open into the universe, into the beyond. And itself is very inspiring that this thing that we carry around with us is actually a window to the universe, is actually a window to beyond. And this is not philosophy. This is not about concept. This is not about philosophy of thinking about infinity. This is about real seeing, realizing, knowing. So I want to finish with a poem that I found by someone called David Brezier. And I don't know if anyone knows this poet. But it's really, I just found it yesterday, and it is so fitting, this talk and this retreat. It's called Breathe Deep. Breathe deep. Breathe deep. The air fills my lungs, and then my blood receives this grace by which I live a few moments more. My every cell is replenished, means renewed, with every breath. A part of me departs and something new is put in place. The rice that I ate yesterday, where is it now? In my muscle, in my bone. The juice we shared, where is it gone? In our arms and legs and all? Last month, the rice waved in the sunshine in other lands, in the low floodplains of the Mississippi, or Irrawaddy, which is a river in Burma, in Myanmar. And the fruit hung on trees in Cyprus, Sicily, or Spain. And before that? Before that, their substance was in the soil, was in the air, was in the seas, waiting to be gathered up, waiting to soar up into the highest reaches of the sky, waiting to become rain. You and I are mostly water. Last year, most of each of us was in the ocean. We circulated together in the Atlantic, or perhaps the Pacific. And that water was lifted by sunshine heat, by the impact of photons cascading down, beating upon the ocean's face. And every photon comes from the sun, from the belly of the star. You and I were stars last year. We chased each other in the turbulent heart of the sun. So who was it that lived in your house last year? And where will you be next week? Who is your true friend? And who your foe? And who will you be next year? Breathe deep. Breathe deep. This air is me. This air is you. This air we share. I give my substance to you, and you, yours to me. With each breath, I am linked in a single orbit with the great forests. My outbreath is their food. Theirs fills my lungs. Last year, I was a tree, and the tree was me. Each day, we gather up substance continue the task of endlessly remaking ourselves from each other. Each day, we discard, we let go a portion and continue the cycle of endlessly returning ourselves to others. Day by day we change and become one another. The substance of the universe, stardust and all, passing through us each and we through it. So where were you last year? Breathe deep. Breathe deep. So let's take a moment of silence.